Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5.
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL season.
Stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Patriots Playbook for Thursday, right here on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook with you on what has turned out to be yet again another wet Thursday in the Northeast. This morning it was blizzard-like conditions in Boston again. If you're around the area, then you know what we're talking about, although a little less so south. In southern New England, we still look at the weather forecast coming up for Sunday's game with the Miami Dolphins, and it appears to be mid to upper 40s and wet. Rain this time, not necessarily snow in the forecast for Sunday. So if you have tickets, if you're coming to the game, just make sure not only, yes, you still should be dressed warmly for this time of year. I mean, for goodness sakes, people, get real. But, you know, prepare for wet stuff. I don't know how that affects the game just yet. Based on what we saw this last week. Suffice to say, I think cold and wet is worse than warmer and wet, although I don't think wet is really good for anybody, but hey, let's just wait and see how it goes. You know, I know the PFW guys, when they do their picks on Thursdays, you know, they all had a tendency to go, you know, with the Dolphins, or I mean, go with the Patriots to cover over the Dolphins with the win, especially. But based on weather, you know what? Right now... Gang, it's tough for me. It's tough for me to take the Patriots in 22. It's tough for me to do it. I don't know that. Keep in mind now, they won the first game by 21 at Miami. Game that they led 42-7.5, ended up winning 49-28. So I don't know that I can give them, I don't know if I can give the Patriots the 22 in this one. I'd say based on what we saw last week and what we saw two out of the previous 3 weeks prior to that, my tendency is to say that the Dolphins cover that 22. But that's just me being a naysayer. I'd like to know how you feel, because since this is Thursday, this is prediction day, so fire off the scores, webradio@patriots.com. Send them in. Let me know what you think the score will be. Predict the game. If you have some reasons, some causes, what have you. Let's see what you got. I mentioned to the guys a couple of moments ago, EA Sports used the Madden NFL 08 game, and they created a matchup between the 72 Dolphins against the 07 Patriots, the two teams that look liable. One obviously is already there. The other one is trying to get there, to be the NFL's two lone unbeatens in the regular season, at least to this stage of the game. I really thought it was kind of fascinating. I mean, you think, you know, initially, oh, the 07 Patriots crushed them, which is what the guys just said. But it wasn't really the case. I'm not going to go play-by-play through this for you, but just see here some of the interesting points that I noticed from the result. Again, the result was Patriots 31, Dolphins 27. So, frankly, yes, that was a little closer than I thought it would be. I thought maybe when I saw the story on the sim, I thought, well, probably about 17 to 20, somewhere in there. That's what I thought. But so it was closer than I thought it would be. And here's what they did to kind of level the playing field, considering the, you know, 35 years between the two teams. They added a few pounds to Miami's starting offensive line, which averaged at that time, back in 1972, their offensive line averaged about 250 pounds per man. Well, that's the size of a linebacker today, pretty much. But that was about the normal size for an offensive lineman 35 years ago, about 250 pounds per man. So what they did is they added a few pounds per man. I think they brought it up to around 280-ish, somewhere in that vicinity. Then the rules for the game reflected today's rules. And the example that I gave was one of the ones that EA Sports gave in the sim. Defensive backs, obviously, back in 72, they say here, could mug a receiver down the field until the pass was thrown. And once the pass was in the air, then, according to the rules of the day in 72, then the defensive back could not touch the receiver. Today, of course, you touch a receiver after 5 yards, and, yeah, you could very well see a flag. So, at any rate, they reflected today's rules rather than 1972, so that put I think the 72 Dolphins had a little bit more of a disadvantage, shall we say, if you actually did this in a real-world scenario. But somewhat surprisingly, the Dolphins hung in there. In fact, the Dolphins had a 10-7 lead at the end of the first quarter. At halftime, the score was 17-17. Patriots, in fact, tied it, according to the simulation here, on a Steven Gostkowski 37-yard field goal with 4:03 to go before halftime. Let's see. The Dolphins scored their touchdowns, in case you were interested, on a 1-yard Larry Zonka run, a 36-yard field goal from Garo Yupremian, and a 63-yard run from Mercury Morris. Oh, my. Please, nobody tell the real Mercury that he scored on a simulated run against the Patriots. We'd never hear the end of it. And then in the third quarter, that's when the Patriots fell into a little bit of trouble. They took a 24-17 lead on a Lawrence Maroney 3-yard run. Then with 2:40 to play in the third quarter, Garo Yupremian knocked home a 29-yard field goal to make it 24-20. And then just before the fourth quarter, Paul Warfield on a 6-yard touchdown pass from Bob Greasy, and the Dolphins led it 27-24 headed into the fourth quarter. In that fourth quarter, there was only one score, and it came with 5:42 to play. Tom Brady, 2-yard touchdown pass to Jabbar Gaffney, 31-27 Patriots, and that was the final score in the simulated game. Statistically speaking, the big heroes were Brady and Randy Moss. Brady threw for 314 yards. He did throw 2 touchdown passes to Moss in the first half. The first score of the game was a 3-yarder, and the second score of the game early in the second quarter was a 9-yarder. So that was the scoop. 31-27 Patriots in the EA Sports simulated game between the 72 Dolphins and the 2007 Patriots. What do you think about those apples, huh? Web radio at patriots.com if you have some thoughts on that one way or the other. They kind of broke down some of the individual matchups as well. Randy Moss, for instance, against the Miami cornerbacks of the day, Tim Foley and Curtis Johnson. They had Paul Warfield, of course, the outstanding Hall of Fame receiver for the Dolphins against Asante Samuel, which, frankly, I find the most intriguing matchup on both sides, and the one that I thought that, you know, given the day and the age and which these, you know, eras, you know, and these players actually existed, to me, that's the most intriguing matchup of all out on the field. Because actually, I think Paul Warfield was talented enough where he'd give Asante Samuel some problems based on the physical, if you actually put it in real day, present day terms. Warfield was, you know, he was one of the best route runners ever to play the game. He was smooth. He was slick. He wasn't just downright speedy fast, but he was just, he was very Jerry Rice-like, well before Rice's time, if that makes any sense to you at all. Paul Warfield was a great receiver. Now, obviously, Samuel, you know, is athletically more inclined to be able to stay with a guy like Warfield, even for his time. But Warfield, I think, was ahead of his age and ahead of his day. Warfield then could be Warfield now and still play well. And probably be an all-pro receiver, my thoughts. In fact, my guess would be that of all those 72 Dolphins, the ones that really stand out as being, I think, potentially, if you took their talents then and then kept them alive to the point where they could actually play today in present-day circumstances, Warfield, maybe Greasy, maybe, and I would say Zonka, Larry Zonka, probably have the best chance of playing today based on their talents back then. They had Mercury Morris in a matchup with Rodney Harrison, which was kind of interesting. They had Tom Brady against Miami's Jake Scott and Dick Anderson. We were the, you know, probably the preeminent safeties in the entire NFL back in 72, and they both just happened to reside in South Florida. So I thought it was pretty cool. Just some of the numbers. Here's some of the numbers for you stat geeks like me. The statistics in this simulated game, Brady was 22 of 31, 314 yards, 3 touchdowns. Rushing, Lawrence Maroney, 19 carries, 81 yards and a touchdown. Randy Moss had 7 catches, 121, 2 touchdowns. Dante Stallworth had 5 for 80. Let's see, the Dolphins superlatives. Greasy was 12 of 17 for 163 and a touchdown. Earl Morrill actually came in and played and was 8 for 11 for 100 yards. It's probably basically because they split the time that year anyway with injuries. And so, again, you read the simulation in there and looking at the season numbers and trying to, you know, sort of prorate that out over what would happen in the game, it's liable that that's how Morrill got his snaps in the game. I doubt very seriously they would go with a two-quarterback system against the Patriots with Earl Morrill, but hey, you never know. Mercury Morris was 18 carries, 122 yards, and a touchdown against the 07 Patriot defense. Somehow, inexplicably, Larry Zonka only had 9 carries and 33 yards for a touchdown. To me, I would have thought it would have been exactly opposite. I would have thought Zonka would have pounded away, in theory, at the Patriots' middle. Pound, pound, pound. Try to keep the ball again out of, you know, Brady's and the Patriots offense's hands, right? And who better to do that than with Larry Zonka, for goodness sakes? One of the best between the tackle runners that maybe have ever existed in the NFL. Certainly in that era, he was the best. And he only had 9 carries for 33 yards in that one. And based on the breakdown of the scoring as it occurred, I mean, the Dolphins were never out of the game. So I could see Zonka getting less carries if the Dolphins were having to throw the football to come from behind, but wow, that was a little surprising. Receiving, Paul Warfield, 6 catches, 69 yards, and a touchdown. Howard Twilley, remember him? 4 catches, 88 yards. Led them in yardage. So anyway, I thought those were the interesting things to come out of the sim. Again, it was done by EA Sports, and I think in conjunction with ESPN, and they used Madden NFL 08 to drive the simulation, and the Patriots won it 31-27. And really, that's as close as we'll ever get to really comparing the two teams. If, of course, the Patriots do end up 16-0, and you have the two teams that were perfect during the regular season. Patriots, of course, will try against the 2007 version of the Dolphins to become the first team to ever in the 88-year history of the NFL to ever start a season 15-0. Thought I'd just throw that out there, even though I know you already knew that. But that's what we've got coming up on Sunday. A couple of other things that I wanted to bring up that have come to light from yesterday's show. You know, we made, you know, the rather impassioned plea, passionate plea, for Wes Welker's inclusion into the Pro Bowl. And even if that falls on deaf ears ultimately and he does not get in, it was determined late yesterday that the Kimberly-Clark Corporation and Shaw's Supermarkets awarded the 2007 Patriots 12th Player Award to Wes Welker. The award is presented annually to the Patriots player who personifies Patriots team spirit, performs beyond expectations, and is recognized for his contributions to the organization on the field and in the community. So I thought that was pretty cool. Last year, the 12th Player Award winner was Lawrence Maroney. Willie McGinnis won it in 05, Troy Brown in 04, Gary's boy Dan Klecko won it in 03, Adam Vinatieri won it in 2002, Brady won it in 2001, Teddy Bruschi won it in 2000, just to back you up in this decade as the winners of the 12th Player Award. But it went to Wes Welker. So I thought that was very fitting and deserving as well, just to give some notoriety and a few props to a guy who certainly deserves it and needs to be recognized for his performances. And he may ultimately still be recognized somewhat for his performances before all is said and done this season. The other big issue, and this is sort of off the field, heading into this game on Sunday, but now we have a little different X factor involved here, do we not? Coming into the game on Sunday, after all, the Miami Dolphins now are Bill Parcells' team. Uh-huh. Yesterday, about this time, we were talking about how it looked like the Atlanta Falcons were going to end up landing the tuna and have him as their vice president of football operations. And as it turns out, he was using the Falcons perhaps all along to get what he needed from the Miami Dolphins. Now, yes, keep in mind that Bill has not one, but I believe two homes in Florida. So if he could return to the NFL, he's going to want to do it somewhat close to home. And that's why I think this makes a lot of sense. But please, do not underestimate. And I think many of you, being Patriots fans since well before the Bill Parcells era here in the 1990s, I think you understand that it takes a rather unique ego to drive an individual like Coach Parcells. Yes, he's very successful. He will undoubtedly be a Hall of Famer. He just can't stay away from the game, no matter how, you know, much he tries. I mean, he's been away again 1 year. He's 67 years old now. You wonder how much drive he has. I think taking this job shows you how much drive the man still has. He might not have the wherewithal to deal with day-to-day problems of coaching, and by that I mean dealing with players and their personalities. And fact is that he's very much old school, and he just either A, couldn't, or B, didn't want to adjust to the ways that players do things nowadays as opposed to, say, 10 to 20 years ago when he was in his prime coaching. Understood. Okay, buy that to an extent, right? You'll buy that. But he still has the drive. And so now, even though he really hasn't proven it on a player personnel level per se, now he's getting a chance basically to buy the groceries in Miami. And make no mistake about it, when you add to the fact that, you know, A, he's close to his homes, and B, he has a chance to hook up twice a year with two of the organizations in which he's basically brought back from the dead, oh, let me tell you, ego is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Sometimes you really need to learn to be careful what you wish for because you just might get it. And I think that's exactly the instance in this case. I'm sure he relishes the chance to go, you know, and try to pound on the Jets and certainly match wits again with Bill Belichick, his former protege. Don't you think? I mean, really, come on. You have to have a decided, driving, class A, type A personality / ego in order to be successful. He has it. And if you're thinking, you know, I got a chance to, you know, take a little of the luster off of, you know, King Bill, I'm going to do it just to show him that I still can. Oh, yeah, that very much enters into the equation. Absolutely, 110% could not be more unequivocal in that statement. Ego drives the bus. In this case, drives the tuna. So now he's got a chance. He's got what he's wished for. He gets to, you know, toil and go back to work close to home. He gets to craft a team in his image, which basically he did with the Dallas Cowboys, even though, you know, he didn't get a chance to coach this team. And frankly, I think this is one of the few good things that Jerry Jones has really ever done with the Cowboys. He knew when to change captains on that Cowboys ship. Parcells drafted and brought in players because the Cowboys didn't have much when he first got there, admittedly. And he pushed and cajoled and nurtured and brought along. And then it was time for a guy like Wade Phillips, who is less demanding, to come in and smooth everything over. And look what the Cowboys are doing. You know, got a chance to perhaps be there in the Super Bowl against the Patriots, perhaps, you know, coming up in February. So that's his team. That's his team. You know, he took the Patriots to Super Bowls. He took the Jets to the AFC Championship game. You know, the Cowboys this year are still his byproduct. And obviously he won two Super Bowls with the Giants. So now you have Bill Parcells back within the division. So when you watch the Miami Dolphins this weekend and you say, oh my, you know, how bad could this team get? You know, we're going to pound on this team for a couple of more years at least before they get back to some semblance of normalcy. Well, be careful. I don't know that he can change it overnight. I'd say it's highly unlikely. But now you're dealing with Bill Parcells, Miami Dolphins, starting this Sunday. This is when the evaluation period begins. He's got 2 weeks left in the regular season to see what he likes on this team and decide, you know, hey, whatever he can discard, he most likely will. By the way, anybody think, this is the first thing I thought of when I heard late last night that he had put the end run on Atlanta and decided to hook up with the Miami Dolphins as their VP of football ops. First thing I thought of was, God, you know what? Boy, are we so lucky. We are so incredibly lucky in New England. Why is that? Because you know there's no way in hell, there is no way that Wes Welker becomes a Patriot if Bill Parcells is at the helm. No way. Absolutely no shot. So how lucky are we now that this happened under Randy Mueller's regime? There's no way Parcells deals Welker, number one, and he certainly doesn't deal him within the division, no matter how many or what kind of quality draft picks you get in return. Not happening. See, that's the thing that will probably immediately make the Dolphins better. He won't make stupid moves like that. You agree or disagree? Webradio at patriots.com. That's our email address. Let's see if we can get to a few of those emails. Coming up on the program, of course, the top of the next hour, Russell Baxter, our NFL research coordinator from ESPN. He'll join us as he normally does on Thursdays. We'll have locker room conversation as well with the Patriots, and we'll have the conference calls from the Miami Dolphins, Cam Cameron, their head coach, and Cleo Lemon, their starting quarterback. How nervous is Cam Cameron right now? Any thoughts one way or the other? Do you think maybe that he's going to end up being Bill Parcells' guy after all is said and done? I can't imagine, I really can't imagine Bill Parcells not wanting to bring in his own guy to coach. If I'm Cam Cameron, I think I'm probably somewhat nervous about it. Let's get a couple of emails in here, and then let's hear from Coach Cameron. This one comes from Yarick, who says, Bill Belichick, granted, is the best head coach in the NFL by far. However, when you violate rules of fair play, are fined to the nth degree, you're demoted from considerations. So he's talking about the Coach of the Year conversation that we were talking about yesterday. He says, my first choice is Mike McCarthy, as he only had four Pro Bowlers. A few curious omissions there, like Jennings, a protected 14-2 record, an aged Favre, and no big-name running back. He says, my second choice is Tony Dungy. Although he has the best QB, none of the current D linemen have started in last year's Super Bowl, coaching up rookie wide receiver Gonzalez, no Harrison most of the season, and many other injuries and departures. A projected 14-2 record and a shot at the Pats on a much better surface than in the past. Honorable mentions, John Gruden in Tampa, Romeo Crennel in Cleveland. Shame, and hard to believe that this year for this award 16-0 and maybe even 19-0 if it counted in the voting will not be enough. For those who disagree, you probably believe that Vic cares about dogs. Well, I don't know that I'd go that far, Eric, but I understand your point. All right, let's squeeze one more in here for the time being. Henry says, Brady has done it. And he's talking about zoning in on Moss. Brady has done it. It has worked so far. I don't think it'll be a big problem. Brady brought it up in an interview and admitted to it. So what do you think he's going to do now? He's going to spread it out. Big game for Welker this week, says Henry. Actually, big game for everyone this week. My view on Maroney, well, who cares? The passing game is great. Fair enough. Webradio at Patriots.com. Need your score predictions for Sunday. Will the Patriots cover the 22? Will they obliterate the Dolphins? Will they put them back on their heels? Will they send them packing? Are the Dolphins ready to pack it in themselves after getting their one and so far only win of the season? Or do they answer the bell like the Baltimore Ravens and maybe somewhat similar to what the Philadelphia Eagles did? Do they treat this as their one shot at fame, if not fortune, for 2007 by putting together one gargantuan effort against the Patriots this Sunday? They are the last team to beat New England in the regular season. How soon we forget, 21-0 a year ago. If the Patriots win this Sunday, they'll tie their record of 18 consecutive regular season wins. Can the Dolphins do it? Cam Cameron, the head coach of the Dolphins, he certainly thinks they can. Here's his conference call with members of the Patriots media.
Good morning.
Good morning, Cam. How are you?
We're doing good.
I congratulate you on your victory last week.
Well, thank you. As we all know, you can't enjoy those too long because you need to move on. And obviously, we got a great challenge this week, and we've moved on. But thank you.
Yeah, the thing about it is, despite that the series of losses, you had a lot of games where it's a field goal or less. It was you're always knocking on the door, so you kind of wonder where was the what was the ingredient missing to get you over the top. Certainly, you had a You found the ingredients last weekend.
Well, that's basically for most teams every week in the National Football League, and most games are close. And in close games, as we did this past week, we blocked a kick. We made some plays that made the difference in the game, and that's what it comes down to.
Let me ask you this: is the progress? Is that game last weekend a sign of progress in it's not only as a team but individually with some players, and I point to Cleo as an example of that.
Well, I think there's no question that the progress that we see in terms of our preparation, from my viewpoint, is the key, and how we've continued to prepare and the way we practice. I think that's been important. There's been no decline in either of those. So I think when you see that out of your team, you know, you've got a chance each week. And then you see individually different performances each week. And got young guys that are continuing to play hard, continue to improve, and then you got a player like Jason Taylor who goes in, and like I said, he got two sacks, he blocks a kick, darn near caught a touchdown. So even our veteran players are playing hard to win, and our young players they don't know any different, so they just play hard, and I think they're excited to be out there.
Cam, the fact that your team is growing, you've got a lot of young players, different. Is it in coaching? Do you kind of have to look at the individual's progress by little steps and not worry about the big picture?
Well, answer your question, yes. And there'll be time to look at the big picture a couple of weeks from now. But we've played a lot of young players, and really that wasn't the plan to play all these young guys.
Right.
But for whatever reasons, a variety of reasons, these guys have been forced to play. They've stepped up, and a lot of them have done a nice job. But as we all know, there's a learning curve in the National Football League for young players, and we're seeing that with our guys. They're no different.
You know, this is like a Super Bowl for you guys. If you could knock off the Patriots, that would be a huge, a National Football League focus for the Dolphins to accomplish that and to come back. And is that the way your players are looking at it, or just another NFL game?
Well, for us to say that it's just another NFL game, I think would be naive on our part. However, it's a division game. It's a game against a very good football team. It's a game that, I guess, a team that we didn't play very well against before. But our approach isn't going to change. I mean, our preparation has been ongoing, and I don't know how to approach it any other way. And then when the game comes around, you go play, and that's what we'll do.
You got Tom Brady is having an incredible year. I mean, you see him on film, we see him live. He is, and he's got a cast of characters that are just playing out of their minds. And Welker, one of your guys, is a prime example of that. Where do you see Brady now, and historically, where is he as a quarterback, or where can he go? Let's put it that way.
Well, I think that time will prove all that out. But I think, from my perspective, I've always had a tremendous amount of respect for him. And for me, it's because of the competitor he is. From the coaching side, you can talk about all the touchdowns. You can talk about all the points. But here's a guy that truly understands the importance of taking care of the football. I mean, that's what wins. I think he's, a half a dozen interceptions. Am I right there?
Yeah, you're right.
That statistic, I remember 3 years ago, the fewest that I had seen was 8. And you guys have to double check
who,
that.
Who was that, Cam?
Well, I remember Drew Brees did it,
yeah.
And then with 8 and Troy Aikman. That was now, and I think maybe last year somebody had, but I don't know that anybody's gone a year with only 6. So to me, that statistic speaks the loudest to me in terms of just his understanding about winning.
Isn't that amazing? You talked today about the fact that, you talk to your family, you talk to the media, some say you're great in one area or you're weak in another area, but the only person we listen to, and it's not a slam against anybody, is Belichick. He's the only one that seems to know, are we better than we look in an area? And it's having the confidence in a head coach to do that. It takes time to develop that. Certainly 3 Super Bowls will give you the credit to do that. But how do you know, how do you build that up as a coach and with a team?
Well, it's number one, obviously, tremendous amount of respect for Bill as well, and have for a long time, and the job that he's done there. And with all that you say, the other thing that we have to remember, this thing can change in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
With an injury here, an injury there, sometimes just a bounce here, a bounce there, so a lot of these plans can change. So I think the impressive thing from my perspective has just been the adaptability that he's shown. And that's something that we all learn in this business. You got to be able to adapt. You got to be able to grow when different circumstances come up. And I think that's the thing that stands out in my mind that he's been able to do, and that's allowed him to sustain the success they've had there.
It's a tough racket to be in, certainly, a head coach. There's not too many jobs that have it. How did you handle it during the period where you were winless?
Well, you, number
individually,
one,
I mean.
Well, I think it's important that you stay the course, you know what you believe, and, you know, when you've been in a similar situation, when we were the last team in the league in San Diego, you know, learned a lot from Marty Schottenheimer, and to go from, again, last in the league, the first pick in the draft, and claw our way out of that, and work our way up the ladder, so to speak, was a great learning experience. So you don't lose belief in what you believe, and you don't lose belief in the people around you. I've got an outstanding staff, and we never lost belief in the players, and that hasn't changed, and that's not going to change. And I think that that's the key.
Do you think that what you have now, that it's a good step in talent, and you obviously have to add more to it? But
well, everybody knows, you know, this is this year, and my job and our job is to get the most out of what we have every given year, and that's this year, and then you assess things at the end of the year, and then you have to reinvent yourself and grow each and every year, whether you're in the playoffs, out of the playoffs, first pick of the draft, last pick of the draft, whatever it is. But we're called to maximize this team and the circumstances we're in right now. And in 2 weeks, we'll know if we've done that.
Great. Well, thank you, Cam. I appreciate it, and good luck to you. And let the enjoyment of the season, the holiday season, be with you.
Thank you.
All right, that's Cam Cameron, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, as he met with Ron Hobson of the Quincy Patriot Ledger, who's a longtime, of course, veteran beat writer covering the Patriots and serving as the moderator of the conference call at Gillette Stadium, asking all of the questions of Coach Cameron earlier as the Dolphins come in for the 4:15 Eastern Time kickoff on Sunday here in Foxborough with a record of 1-13. Can't believe... It almost sounds strange, but it's just I don't know that you could make this stuff up. I really don't. The Dolphins, the last team to beat the Patriots in the regular season, 21-0 last December the 10th. And then, of course, they followed that win up with 16 straight defeats before beating Baltimore 22-16 in OT last Sunday. 16 straight losses. Of course, the Patriots have responded now with 17 straight wins and can make it 18 since that loss if they win on Sunday. Miami has gone in the complete opposite direction. And so now they have, you know, from what I understand, and in conversation earlier today with Adam Schefter from NFL Network, he was on WEEI with us again this morning, and he mentioned that he thought that based on his conversations with those that covered the Dolphins and a few people close to the team and to the situation there, that their entire focus was on getting off the schneid. They desperately, any way they possibly could, wanted to get a win somewhere, and they felt like last week was their last best chance, and they did it. And so now, feeling like also that several of their banged-up players, and they are certainly banged up as much as any team in the entire league this year, they felt like, well, you know, some of the players on this team, for instance, Jason Taylor being one, Zach Thomas being another, were just hanging on as long as they did through week 7, week 8, week 9, week 10, hanging on because they wanted to play on the field to get that one win, make sure that they got the one win so they could, you know, so they would not go down in inglorious defeat and go down in infamy as the first 0-16 team in NFL history. Yes, I do recall the 76 Tampa Bay Bucks went 0-14, but that's kind of like the 72 Dolphins. It's a different universe now. And, you know, guys, you know, stayed active and played through some of their nicks and their dings until they got the win. And so it wouldn't surprise him if a guy like Jason Taylor did not play this weekend. Others, Channing Crowder, we talked about yesterday with Jeff Darlington from the Miami Herald. He had arthroscopic surgery. He's going to miss the last couple of weeks. So there goes a linebacker. Several other guys, you know, may not play because it's kind of like, all right, you know what? Our main primary focus for the remainder of 2007 was to get a win somehow, some way, any way we can. And they did it. So rather than have a Super Bowl-like Herculean effort, much similar to what Baltimore had a few weeks ago, in an effort to try to, you know, leave a lasting impression on 07 and, you know, play the real spoiler, you know, at the holiday party that the Patriots are trying to throw here, the Dolphins now said, you know what, we got the win. We're not going to be the worst team in history. We can breathe easy now. And because there won't be that focus and there won't be that desire, because a lot of guys, frankly, are just beat up, that this may be easier for the Patriots to accomplish in terms of getting a win this weekend than a lot of people expect it to be right now. And again, that's just based on conversations with people who have, you know, covered the team and followed the team, through Adam Schefter at NFL Network. So I don't know. I frankly don't know how much stock I put in that, to be honest with you. That's what our conversation was earlier today, to make you privy to that. I did say earlier that I wasn't entirely certain the Patriots would cover the 22 here, just based on what we've seen over, three of the last 4 weeks in which the Patriots have played and not covered against teams that they had 20-plus point spreads on going into kickoff. Didn't cover a single one. So because of that, I'm kind of wondering overall, where's the logic here? It doesn't sound like there is much. If, of course, you believe what, Adam Schefter is getting from Miami and getting, from that particular story. If you add a lot of stock into that. Frankly, it does make a little bit of sense, They're trying to finish up, without anybody getting killed. And, obviously the entire organization is going to go in another direction with Bill Parcells now getting ready to handle the football operations part of the equation in Miami. There could also be, a small sliver here, a part of this team that says, I'm playing for my career. I'm playing for my job over the next 2 weeks. I need to leave a good impression. And what better way to leave a good impression than, whacking the Patriots upside of the head? So I suppose there's a couple of different ways that you could look at it. Ultimately, we won't know which way the Patriots fall until we get, into Sunday and find out which way it goes. I still tend to believe that it's going to be difficult for the Patriots to cover this thing, that 22-point spread. Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. Looking for your score predictions here. I'm sorry, what did you say, Gary? Thank you very much. I'm leaning right now toward, I said if they don't cover it, I'm going to say very close. Now, we're supposed to have rain on Sunday as it now stands. Probably mid to high 40s and rain. About a 60-70% chance of rain. If we do get that kind of precipitation on Sunday, I think, yes, it will affect the game somewhat. I'm going to say the Patriots will win this game 34-13. That's 21. So, no, they don't cover the 22. Right now, I'll say 34-13, and it could be closer than that. What are your thoughts? Webradio@patriots.com. Coming up in about 15 to 20 minutes, Russell Baxter will join us from ESPN, as he does on Thursdays. We'll look at the Pats Dolphins, and we'll look at the rest of Week 16 around the National Football League. Right now, though, let's get back toward the Dolphins, and their starting quarterback for Sunday is Cleo Lemon.
Hey, how you doing?
Cleo, how are you?
I'm good.
Congratulations on your performance last week.
Thank you.
On two levels, you won a game, and you played well.
Thank you, sir.
How did it, what was the manifestation of it afterwards? How did you guys react to it? I mean, it was a long road, and we've covered teams that have had the same problems over the years, but when they win, it's just like an exhale all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah, that's basically what everything you're saying, because, a lot of frustration, has been setting in around the locker room. Guys been, busting their tail off and working hard, and just, we haven't been having the success that we've been looking for, and to be able to, to finish that game up with a win and do it in that fashion, it felt great.
The focus, the quarterback is always the focus guy, especially when things are going bad, and you got in last week. Why is it you came in with such a smooth performance and did so well, and the offense clicked so well? You never know, I guess, and as time goes on, but you guys are well prepared for that game.
Yeah. Whenever you get a chance to play, especially the game you love so much, you know, you just want to take advantage of it. And, you know, I was given the opportunity to play and you know, just wanted to come out and just, you know, not only just prove to myself, but prove to my teammates, you know, that I could get the job done. These guys, you know, they've had a lot of support for me and they, you know, they've had my back throughout a long, tough season and, you know, just wanted to come out and just win the game for, you know, just for all the teammates that's been working so hard.
You know, Cleo, this is a, you know, this week is the week, I guess, that was for you guys because you're coming off a win. You're playing the team that is trying to break the Dolphins' record of 72. There's a lot going on here, and wouldn't this be the best time to have your really the finest game of the year?
Yeah, you know, for us, you know, we don't have anything to lose, you know, and we're playing a great team. You know, New England's a great team, and, you know, they really don't have any weaknesses. And we know it's going to be a tough challenge. We're in for a dogfight, and you know what? We're gonna go up there, and we're going to lay it on the line. You know, we're going to go up and play our hardest and see what happens because, you know, we want to finish this season off on a positive note, you know, finish up with a nice winning streak. But, you know, with the Patriots right there at our doorsteps, you know, it's going to be tough. But from that standpoint, you know, we're going to go up there and fight.
Their defense is doesn't get as mentioned as often as the offense with Brady and all. But it's a defense that can be very confusing, isn't it?
It's probably the smartest defense that's in the league. Those guys, they just play so smart. You know, they read recognition of plays, different motions and different shifts and different formations that you give them. You know, it really doesn't confuse them. They always communicate, you know, throughout the whole game. They do a great job of communicating. And they play well as a unit. And, you know, they have a real solid veteran leadership with Brewski and Junior and Rodney, you know, and those guys. And they have a lot of great players like Asante and Seymour. So, you know, it's a solid group from top to bottom. And, you know, we know we're in for a fight. So it's going to be tough, but we think we can get the job done, though.
One of the, I think, an interesting aspect to your year is the fact that you have four rushing touchdowns. You know, not many quarterbacks get that. And then one more, and you're going to set, that's, I think it's a franchise record, five in a season, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
You like running, apparently.
You know, if there's a hole and there's an opportunity for me to get outside or get up into the line of scrimmage and make something happen, you know, I feel comfortable doing that. And, you know, with this defense, you know, they're a defense that's real. You know, they take advantage of mistakes, you know, and if I can cut down on the mistakes, you know, secure the ball, take care of the ball, and, you know, if it's not there, don't try to force it. It makes some things happen with my feet. I think, we can give ourselves a real chance of coming out on top.
Running has been obviously a part of your career since you started, I assume.
Yeah, it's been a part of it. You know, it's one of those deals where if it's not there and you don't have a chance to throw the ball away, you know, why not make something happen with your feet, you know, maybe gain a couple yards just to put yourself in a manageable down the distance. And, you know, plays like that, you know, eliminating the negative plays, they go a long way.
And you got the ball to Camarillo last week, and Ted Ginn is developing into a very nice young wide receiver, isn't he?
Yeah, well, you know, we have some young guys on that in our receiving core, but, you know, those guys have been improving, you know, every week. And we've seen that growth. Greg stepped up this last game and played a major part in us converting on third downs. And like you said, with Teddy maturing each and every week, and he's showing the big play capabilities. You know, we like what we see out of these guys, and these guys can continue to grow, and we have a lot of confidence in them. So, you know, we'll see what happens this Sunday going against a veteran unit. But at the same time, we like our personnel.
You know, Brady talked today about when people, you know, family or media and all, you know, they look at the Patriots and how they're going, and they'll say they're really great in all areas. And we said, well, we know different because we have a head coach that always points out the areas we need work, and we know we're the only ones that really know, and we have such confidence in our coach, that's what we believe. It's hard to develop that with a new coach because you don't have any background. Has the relationship between Cam and the rest of the team, are you growing together, would you say?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. This is, you know, Cam's first year in Miami, and, you know, it's going to be some growing pains. But from that standpoint, you know, guys are responding well to the system. You know, they're starting to buy in and believe into the whole atmosphere that he's trying to create around here. And it's a positive atmosphere. And guys, you know, they continue to work hard and they continue to understand what we're trying to get done with this system. But at the same time, you know, it's a work in progress. It's not going to happen overnight. You know, it's a growing process, and these guys are going to continue to get their personnel in, the guys that they want here, you know, to run that system. And, you know, it's going to be changed, but at the same time, you're going to see guys another year in the system, you know, another year with Cam, being familiar with all his coaching styles, and I think you're going to continue to see that growth.
Do you guys, as a team, have you talked, even though it's early in the week, it's, well, we're at Wednesday already, did you talk about the possibility of what it would mean if you guys could pull off a victory this week, especially, you know, as hard as it would be being here, and knocking the Patriots off, and what it means to the past?
Oh, man, it would mean so much for everybody in South Florida, not only this team, but just everyone in South Florida, because, you know, it's a lot of diehard fans here.
Yeah.
They love the Dolphins, and you know, it's a lot of history here, and, you know, we're a part of that history, and we want to uphold the history, and, you know, if we can go out and get a win, you know, for the 72 team, that'll be great. You know, that'll be really great because, you know, those guys are legends. And, you know, with them being at the last game and having that greatness around, you know, it kind of motivated us to go out and reach for that goal. And, you know, whenever you have perfection, you know, it's tough to follow that. So if we can go out and just win it for those guys, it'll be a great moment.
That team, was at your game last week?
Yeah, the whole team. It was celebrating the 35th anniversary of the 72 undefeated team.
Wow, that must have been pretty exciting after the game when having that coincidence of them being there, wasn't it?
Oh yeah. They had a whole big ceremony during halftime, and you know those guys were on it, you know, like they should have been, and you know it was a great feeling to have those guys back.
It'd be a greater feeling to have the same thing happen this week, isn't it?
Oh man, you couldn't even imagine.
Well, I appreciate talking with us, Cleo, and I wish you the best.
All right, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Bye bye.
Cleo Lemon, again, the starting quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, via conference call with Ron Hobson and Patriots media from earlier at Gillette Stadium. You know, I have to admit, you listen to what he has to say and you're thinking, dude, you got no shot. But then again, you have to appreciate, I think, the fact that he knows he has a shot. He does. And even though he may be somewhat overmatched, the fact is, statistically speaking, I thought he had a pretty good game against the Patriots first time around. It may have been in garbage time, but nevertheless, you know, he seems to have some ability. You got to wonder, again, what a guy like Cleo Lemon is really thinking when, you know, he knows that he is not going to be and may never will be the quote-unquote anointed one. Because, first of all, I think most fans would agree that the Dolphins don't have the anointed one at quarterback. Guy that they picked in the second round last year, and John Beck, well, so far he hasn't done very well this year, now has he? But then again, you could also argue he has had no support personnel whatsoever. So you don't really know what a guy like Beck could do. And yet, here come the Dolphins into the 2008 draft. Next year, they may very well go QB again. Although I kind of tend to agree that, you know, you probably have to look at someone like Glenn Dorsey of LSU. I think that certainly makes the most sense. Of all the quarterbacks that would be available coming out of the college ranks this year, who? Matt Ryan from BC? Brian Brohm, Louisville? I don't know. You know, I mean, good quarterbacks? Yes. Are they franchise savers? I tend to think not. I don't really think that they're Brady Quinns, even, to be honest with you. But who knows? Could be wrong. My guess is that, you know, at least a couple, maybe three quarterbacks could go in the first round. If that is the case, would Miami potentially be one of those? Now with Bill Parcells heading the equation and going to be making the decision as to how the Dolphins are going to travel starting in 2008, my guess would be no, but then again, Parcells did select Drew Bledsoe back in the early 90s when he had an opportunity to do so. And remember, of course, I know Patriots followers from way back will remember this fondly, it was almost like Bledsoe or Meyer, Rick Meyer. Remember him from Notre Dame? Bledsoe or Meyer, Bledsoe or Meyer. Flip a coin, Bledsoe or Meyer. And initially, Parcells wanted Rick Meyer. Can you imagine how that would have changed history?
That was really good in junior high, too.
Yeah, well, had he had his way completely, if Rick Meyer had been selected by the Patriots and not Drew Bledsoe? Ah, the fickle finger of fate shined
favorably. They want you to cook the dinner. At least they ought to let you shop for some of the groceries.
Well, he shopped for the groceries then and came up properly with that one. And now he's going to be shopping for groceries, and even though he won't be necessarily grilling the beef on the open flame, he will definitely be shopping for groceries now in Miami. A couple of other emails for you, and then we'll get to Russell Baxter coming up in just a little bit. This one comes from, let's see, this one comes from Mike, who says, let's be honest, there are not a lot of questions to ask involving the game this week. Okay. But when you're talking about Braylon Edwards, I did think of something that I would like to get your thoughts on. What does Romeo Crennel do next year with their quarterback situation? Do the Browns stick with Anderson, who has led them to a 9-5 record so far, or do you hand the ball over to Brady Quinn, who the Browns paid a lot for, and risk taking a step backwards? He says, sorry, this is not a Patriots-specific question, but it is better than another Lawrence Maroney question. This is true. It's very true. Thank you, Mike. Well, you know, without being, you know, privy to a lot of the inside info within the Cleveland Browns, my guess is that, you know, if they're able to finish 10-6, they're able to get into the playoffs with Derek Anderson. My guess is that Anderson's the guy. They know that they're stocked in case something happens. I don't know right off the top of my head if Anderson is a guy that's under contract for next year. I don't think he is. I think, and I could be wrong on this, but I think he could walk. I think he could go. I think he could free agent. I'm not entirely certain about that. And in that case, you know, I'm sure they'll make him some kind of a qualifying offer. I mean, how can you not? Quarterback leads you to the playoffs, and they actually did a very good job. I personally believe that, you know, Derek Anderson should have gotten more Pro Bowl mention than he did, but okay, you can't really argue with who got in. So, that's a great question. I mean, I think they're in good shape either way. I mean, you know, you bring Derek Anderson back, fine. Then Brady Quinn has another year to learn, has a year to mature. If you don't, well, then you turn the ball over to Quinn and let him roll. And in theory, you have a better seasoned and more veteran lineup to support him than you did this year. So I think it only bodes well for Cleveland in their at least immediate future. That's a good question. Good thought-provoking question there, Mike. Okay, here we go. This one comes from Chris, who says, I agree that Maroney has not been good. He has no vision. I love watching him run into the back of his lineman, and he dances far too much. That said, he wouldn't be the first guy to take a few years to develop. I thought the exact same stuff about Ronnie Brown until this year. He danced in the hole, had no vision, and had to split time with another back. And yet, there he was this year looking downright elite, proving me wrong. I think Maroney deserves another year. He's young, he doesn't have much mileage in the tires, and he may yet do something. Of course, this is a deep year at running back if a bunch of the underclassmen declare. So I think it could be a good thing to take a day one guy like a Kevin Smith, who might slip with a slow 40 just in case. This is from Chris in Raleigh, North Carolina. All right, Chris, thank you for your early draft thoughts on the Pats. If the Patriots end up with a draft pick 2 through 5, the first thing they'll do is try to trade down. If it's outside of the top 5, my guess is they'll probably go ahead and keep it. But if it's in the top 5, I think they'll try to trade down and go defense. I just don't know that they keep the offensive player like a Darren McFadden if they have a chance to get him. It's as glamorous as that would be for all of us. I have a hard time seeing that. Our friend James in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina says, John, I thought you'd find this interesting. James, anytime you send me tables, I find it interesting, believe it or not. He says, they made sure to give the Colts props this week for being the first team to have 12 wins 5 straight years. It is a great accomplishment, but do you know that the Patriots are the only team to have a winning record each of the last 7 seasons? James, I don't think I was aware of that until you told me. He says, they also have a better overall regular season record than the Colts over those 7 years. Even when you just include the last 5 years, Patriots still have a better overall record, 64 wins for the Pats, 62 for the Colts. And he says, oh, yes, I hope this trend continues, but over that same time period when the Patriots have played the Colts in the playoffs, the regular season winner has also won the playoff game. Have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, James in Roanoke Rapids. Good stuff, James. Yeah, he backs it up with a couple of tables and some charts here, but yes, the Colts from 2001 through 2007, they had a losing season in 2001. They were 6-10. Then they've ripped off 6 straight winning seasons. They've won 78 games. Patriots have not had a losing season. Winning years, 0-1 all the way through now. They've won 84 games in that time. As far as the head-to-head is concerned, 7-3 for the Patriots in that time is the advantage. But, yes, the team that won the game in the regular season also won the playoff game. So, yes, if you are a Patriots fan, you certainly would hope that that trend would continue. John in Dallas, your comment about Welker not coming to the Pats if Parcells is in charge, the opposite works as well. Parcells will be going after our free agents heavily in the offseason. Not only will they possibly make the Dolphins stronger, they will also weaken, in part, a division opponent. Well, I guess that's possible, sure. First of all, you got to have an ownership group that is willing to pay the free agents. And whether or not, see, you realize that a guy like Bill Belichick learned at the feet, or, you know, at the hands of a guy like Parcells. And so he learned, I think, how to put value on a particular position. If you're speaking, John, particularly of a guy like Asante Samuel, who I don't believe will be back with the Patriots next year. I think he goes off and finds a free agent deal and gets his money that he won't get with the Patriots because the Patriots put a value on cornerback, and I think they feel like they can get as good a value at corner for less cash. Just my own personal thought. I know there are many of you that think the Patriots should just pay Asante his money, but I don't see the Patriots doing that. I think that that would be against what they've always done. I could be wrong, and I think, you know, if I am wrong, I think I'll be as surprised as anybody. But it could happen. And so if you're saying that they're going to go after Asante Samuel and throw money at him, be careful. Because, again, Patriots, Bill Belichick, Scott Pioli, they learned from Bill Parcells. Okay, so just to go and get a Patriot free agent, they're not going to break the bank. The Dolphins have a lot of need, and I don't think that they can cover up all of the need based on one or two higher-priced free agents that they might snatch away from the New England Patriots, John in Dallas. So I understand what you're saying. I don't necessarily see it that way. You know, he might go elsewhere. But my guess is he'll try to find lower-priced free agents and probably not necessarily with the Patriots. If you're going to go and choose between Miami or New England and you're a lower-priced free agent, where the heck are you going to go? Based on your ability to win and win maybe like, no, I don't know, now? Just a thought anyway. All right, let's take a timeout here. And then in a couple of moments, Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator from ESPN, his regular Thursday visit with us here inside the playbook.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points. Because fans want contact, too. Autograph mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we got to go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce.
We're done at the bottom of the hour.
Maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks, and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Oh, there's no place like home for the holidays.
Well, that's where the Patriots will be. They're home for the holidays this weekend with the Christmas weekend upon us. And, of course, the game with the Miami Dolphins coming up Sunday at Gillette Stadium. Again, a 4:15 Eastern Time kickoff. We welcome you back as we roll into hour number two of Patriots Playbook. And at this time, it is, once again, our pleasure to welcome in Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, Russell.
You well, John. How are we doing?
Excellent today. Yeah. Trying to dodge not only snowflakes, but a few big raindrops today as well.
Well, we've had our share of weather was the story of the National Football League last weekend, as everyone well knows, between New England, between Pittsburgh, between a few flurries in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
We're at that time of the year, as everybody well knows, so it would be very, very interesting to see the stretch run and how it affects everybody.
Well, sure, and of course, I think we talked a little last week about how weather can always be the great equalizer in games. This week, we don't have quite the cold. We don't think we have quite the frozen precipitation, yet we do look like we could get a lot of wet stuff. So does that affect this game on Sunday?
Not really, because I think both teams, I think rain, wind is the thing that really affects teams in terms of the passing game. I don't think rain as much, unless it's sleeting rain and so on. Mm-hmm. I think it always seems like the rain affects more if it's torrential and not necessarily misty and so on. I think there's such an extra emphasis to hang on to the football when it's raining that I don't think it affects as much. Wind, to me, seems to be the over-prevailing factor in terms of playing the game, because there are some people who fumble regardless of conditions. But to me, it would have to be extreme conditions. I think also a lot of times when it comes to rain, they do such a good job now of getting a dry ball in there and you see more guys with gloves and so on. So I think it's less of a factor. But I'll keep on just saying the way wind. Wind is a big factor. We saw it with the Patriots when they played in Baltimore. Definitely had a factor last week and so on. I think that's the only real deterrent. A lot of teams play very, very well in the snow. Unless, of course, it's a blizzard like you saw in Cleveland last week.
Right. Sure. Well, I think that you're right about the weather conditions probably not being quite as great this next week in terms of affecting the outcome of the game, simply because the wind is expected to be lesser. But, you know, when you have a slick football, we know that it's oblong for a reason. It can bounce many different funny ways. It just hasn't bounced too much against the Patriots this year thus far. What are your thoughts initially on Bill Parcells, not only his return to the NFL in a front office capacity, but somehow coming back to Miami and having to face the Patriots a couple of times a year now?
Well, I think that makes for more intriguing drama. It's been such an interesting marriage with Bill Parcells in the National Football League, and I've had the great pleasure of getting to know him a little bit, working with him at ESPN and so on. And, you know, before there was Spygate and before there was all the other craziness with Eric Mangini and Bill Belichick with the Jets stuff, you know, there was a healthy little rivalry going on when Bill was the coach of the Patriots and then wound up the coach of the Jets. Mm-hmm. And one of his big moves with the Patriots was to sign a restricted free agent running back named Curtis Martin to an offer sheet in which the Patriots did not match. And then he wound up with the Jets after having, you know, three fine seasons with New England. And, of course, it was Coach Parcells who drafted Curtis Martin in 1995 when he was with the Patriots. So the Patriots-Jets connections actually started well before Mo Lewis knocking Brady down and so on. It's kind of an ongoing thing. So it is interesting to have Parcells back in the AFC East. Even though he wasn't originally in AFC East to begin with, you know, his tenure with the Giants. But, you know, he's kind of made the circuit. You know, he worked for New England. He worked for the Jets. Now working for the Miami Dolphins. And at least he had the ability to beat Buffalo in a Super Bowl. So
this is true.
I guess he's done the round robin when it comes to the division.
I guess he could always go and replace Marv Levy when he's done in Buffalo.
Well, never say never, as we learn and so on. But, I mean, I don't know if you can think of a better hire. You look at the Cowboys right now, and even though he's not the head coach, his fingerprints are all over the team. You look at the 11 Pro Bowl players that got drafted this week,
right,
and he drafted many of them. You know, the I'm going blank. Terrence Newman,
right.
For instance, who was the very first draft pick he had, and so on. Some of the other moves they made. Now, not everybody. I mean, he did not sign Leonard Davis as a free agent who's going to his first Pro Bowl. Mm-hmm. You never got the impression that he brought in Terrell Owens. I understand that. But he found Tony Romo as a rookie free agent, just like he found a really good rookie free agent kicker his first year in New England in Adam Vinatieri. So, you know, when you're around and when you're the only coach to take four different teams to the postseason in NFL history, which is Bill Parcells' legacy, one of a handful of coaches to take two different teams to the Super Bowl, your footprints or handprints are all over this league. You know, he's the first guy to draft four players in the first round. If you go back to 2000, the year after he quit coaching the Jets, he ran the draft for the Jets in 2000, in which they took four guys in the first round, Sean Ellis, John Abraham, Chad Pennington, and Anthony Becht, all who are playing in the league. They're not all still with the Jets, but they're all still playing in the league. You know, it'll be interesting to see where Chad Pennington winds up, as a matter of fact.
Sure.
But his legacy around the NFL, just like Bill Belichick, who was part of his staff at one time, future Hall of Famers once they finally leave the game. You know, it'd be good to have him back in the NFL. I can safely say we'll miss him around here. There's no doubt about that, because he brings the kind of insight that you don't necessarily get from a player. He brings it from a head coach and an executive mind who's helped build teams, he's helped coach teams, and it's a perspective I enjoy listening to. So
let me ask you a question that an emailer posed to me just a short while ago. He thought that maybe because now Parcells is in Miami, he might look to New England to potentially entice free agents to come away and play for him in Miami, sort of along the lines of what he did with Curtis Martin. What do you think about that?
I think that's always a possibility, because that is the way of not only business in the NFL, but business in general. If you're a startup company, in any line of work, you're going to go get your guys who you're most comfortable with. So I'm sure he'll be talking to coaches around the league. I'm sure the ones he's allowed to. I'm sure he'll entice players, just like Eric Mangini did when he left, just like Romeo Crennel did when he left. You know, there's no accident that Willie McGinnis is in New England, is in Cleveland now, because he played under Romeo Crennel. So it's one of the things about free agency. It's always interesting. It's to connect the dots when it comes to personnel. It's also connect the dots when it comes to coordinators, free agency. That's how the league is now. That's why watching what the Patriots have done, watching what the Colts have done in terms of consistency, continuity in the National Football League is very hard to come by now. It didn't used to be. It used to be we'd have the same teams in the playoffs 6, 7, 8 straight years. Okay? We don't get that necessarily anymore, unless you're a very stable franchise. And Right now, there's no more two stable franchises than the Patriots and the Colts, and that's why they're having the runs that they're having right now.
Is there any reason at all, Russell, do you think, this Sunday for the Patriots and or the Patriot fans to be concerned over the outcome of the game?
Well, unless they know something I don't know. Listen, there's always a lot of pride that goes into divisional games. Look no further than what Philadelphia did last week in Dallas.
Right.
Appearances to the contrary. It had nothing to do with Jessica Simpson, Carrie Underwood, Gina Lollobrigida, Raquel Welch, or anybody else that was around the game. It had to do with the fact that the Eagles have now gone down to Dallas 2 years in a row and beaten them. It has something to do with the fact that Andy Reid is 13-5 lifetime versus the Cowboys. It may have something to do with that. But anytime you get in a divisional game. Now, I know how the first one turned out. It was a blowout. It got a little close at the end there, but when it was all said and done, it was still 49-28. So the Dolphins and the Patriots are on two totally different planes in terms of talent right now. And, you know, I think the Dolphins will play hard because I know they have practiced hard all year, and congratulations for them. They got off the schneid last week against a Baltimore team that looks that has faded consistently for the last 2 months. It just brings up the fact that I still insist it's harder to go winless in this league than it is undefeated in this league. It'd be hard-pressed to convince me that the Dolphins really have a shot at winning this game, although I know they'll play very, very hard. Unless Jason Taylor gets into the backfield about four or five times, forces four or five fumbles, and they run three of them back.
And we still don't really know.
I think that's the Dolphins' best shot.
And we still don't really know about Jason Taylor's overall status for Sunday either.
Exactly. So, I mean, listen, Jason Taylor has been there's no doubt he's been the thorn in the side of this team. He's had some very, very big games, and that's totally understandable because the more you play against the opponent, the more you get to know them. The fact that the Dolphins won last week was absolutely terrific. I don't think it's any good for any team to go winless in this league. And you kind of root for a team not to do that, unless you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You want to get that record off the books.
Right.
Let's not forget something. The Dolphins tried awfully hard at the end there, awfully hard to lose that game when it was all said and done. You know, they had taken the lead. Jay Feely kicked the ball out of bounds. Baltimore got down to the one-yard line but made the decision to kick a field goal rather than going on fourth down with no timeout. So they made it hard on themselves. They did get the win, but it wasn't like they came out and made a statement for next year. So
that's true. What do you think, just in light of, before we start looking at some of the other games around the league, what do you think of Cam Cameron's status now that Bill Parcells is coming as head coach? Based on your knowledge of Coach Parcells, do you think he might be willing to make a change, or might he also be willing to see what Coach Cameron has and work with him for a spell?
I think it's hard to call because in terms of this capacity, and this is not by any knowledge of any conversation, in this capacity, whereas Bill Parcells has always been, except for the Jets year, where he had stepped down and remained in charge of football operations, and Al Groh was the coach, he's always been the coach. So it wasn't that he's really just kind of come in and run an organization. So there's really no history to go on the fact that he's just going to automatically clean house and bring in all his own guys. Mm-hmm. That would obviously, you know, just judging by any kind of conversation he would have, he might like what he hears from Cam Cameron. I'm sure he'll give him any opportunity to keep the job like any other person would be and so on. So it's not really a track record of, well, Bill Parcells comes to a team and then all of a sudden says, I'm cleaning house and these are all my own guys. He's been the head coach more often than he's been the vice president of football operations, John.
This is true.
Yeah.
This is true. All right, let's set it aside then for a moment because I think most fans realize that it would truly be an upset of tremendous proportions if the Dolphins were able to come away with a win. But then again, they're the last team to beat the Patriots. So Patriots have a chance to tie their own record with 18 regular season wins if they can beat the Dolphins this Sunday. They have that. Obviously, they have a chance to go 15-0 for the first time to start a season. First time that would ever have occurred in NFL history. I mean, I realize this is all fait accompli, but it's based on what happens week to week when you keep winning. The records start kind of stacking up. We're also waiting to see whether or not Tom Brady can actually challenge Peyton Manning's record. He certainly got a shot at the Patriots' single-season passing yards record that Drew Bledsoe set a few years ago when he threw for, I think it was 45-55 was the number. So there are several things within reach that I think the Patriots can or at least come close to approaching this week. I don't know if that's incentive or not, but certainly is a good conversation fodder around here.
Well, I mean, 33 points away from tying the Vikings record in 1998.
Right.
Three touchdowns away from tying the 84 Dolphins for most touchdowns in a season.
Mm-hmm.
Randy Moss still has three touchdowns to tie Jerry Rice from his 87 season of receiving touchdowns. Tom Brady, you already mentioned. So, obviously, there are things on the books here that I don't think the Patriots are saying, hey, let's go out and get these and so on. But, you know, just in the natural course of playing the game, they're liable to do these things. They need to score three touchdowns in their last two games to tie the record. So, you know, from what I've seen last week, because the conditions not exactly – no team was going to be an offensive juggernaut up in Foxborough. But I thought it was absolutely amazing, and I really mean this. When a team has a punt blocked for a touchdown, okay, and then plays later, they're able to do that to the other team. How often do you see that happen, John?
Not often.
Almost like a response, because a blocked punt for a touchdown is always such a demoralizing score
right. For
the other team.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the Patriots turn around, and even though Kelly Washington didn't block it for a touchdown, he did block it and set up a touchdown. So it was absolutely brilliant. And they just find ways to do things. Last week, Lawrence Maroney over 100 yards. They just keep on finding ways to win games, even when when things are not going well for the offense. And the Jets, I thought, played very, very hard last week. They just couldn't muster anything. But their defense scores a touchdown, the Patriots do. They held the Jets' offense out of the end zone. They only got one on the block punt return. They just find ways to win. And if you're going to go undefeated, you're going to have games where you find ways to win. You're not going to blow everybody out every week.
This is true. Yeah, we learned that from the 72 Dolphins season.
Absolutely.
Right?
They had their nail-biters against the Jets. They had their nail-biter against Minnesota. Just remember, all you need at this time in the NFL with a 16-game schedule is to have 16 more points than your opponent to go undefeated.
That's true.
Win them all by one.
That's right. Win them all by one.
Win them all by one.
Although they're going to set a record for that, too, in terms of point difference.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because the team that has the record, I believe, is the 42 Bears at 292.
Correct. Right.
Which, by the way, that 42 Bears team then got in the NFL championship game against the Redskins and actually lost.
Yeah, 73-0.
No, that's the 14-6 game. Remember, the Bears in 1940, right.
Okay.
The Bears in 1940 beat the Redskins 73-0. Spread
was
72.5, by the way.
Okay. Pardon me for confusing 40 with 42.
Oh, there was a big revenge game for the Redskins. But when that line came out for the 40 game at 72.5, there were a lot of things that were – people were a little nervous.
Definitely
going
under.
Mike even thought the fix was in.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, let's see. We actually have a game tonight in the NFL. We got Pittsburgh at St. Louis. Saturday game is Dallas at Carolina. I don't know if either one of those teams in one of those games really means much other than Pittsburgh needs to win to see if they can't keep abreast of Cleveland. I don't know if they do it.
I don't know if they do it either. This is a Pittsburgh team that's kind of lost its identity. I think we've mentioned this many times, and we certainly mentioned it the week that they played New England. This is not a Pittsburgh team playing power football, and was very evident last week in the loss to Jacksonville. They're going to have their hands full tonight. They're a little banged up. They're playing on a short week. They haven't played well on the road. And don't be surprised at all, and this is probably blasphemous for the Steeler fans all over the country, and it's a team that a lot of people follow. Don't be totally surprised if the Pittsburgh Steelers completely tumble out of the playoffs this year.
Really?
I know they were sitting there at 9-3 a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
They finished on the road the last 2 weeks. The funny thing is they win tonight. They're not in. But if Cleveland wins on Sunday and beats Cincinnati, they're actually in ahead of the Steelers.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, it's bizarre considering Pittsburgh swept them, but you know it just works out that way with the way the conference schedule is.
Wow.
So,
should Cowboy fans have any reason to be concerned at Carolina on Saturday?
Well, I'm not going to go the cheap path that everybody else has this week with people in the guest box and so on, but I will say this. You run the ball 31 times combined in two games, there should be concern.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that's kind of kind of, John, has looked a little flat since beating the Packers on that Thursday night a couple weeks ago.
Correct.
Struggled with the Lions on defense. Last week, I couldn't understand the offensive imbalance because it was a competitive game. I understood the numbers when they played Detroit because they were behind most of the time. But I did not understand it the other way around. And last week, season low in, I think, rushing attempts. It might have been a season low in rushing yards. And it was a season high in terms of getting sacked for Tony Romo, who threw the ball a lot more to Terrell Owens last week, but there were drops. He looked like he was forcing it at a time. He threw three interceptions. Even though I know statistically, depending, I think, on rating or whatever is his worst game, you know, Tony Romo had a pretty bad game on a Monday night this year and seemed to bounce back from that. So he just didn't do it this week. And, again, Philadelphia has done a real good job against Dallas. The matchup, listen, Philly's had an off year at 6-8. But they damn near went into New England and beat the Patriots on a Sunday night. And they did go into Dallas and beat the Cowboys. So there's still some talent there, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
Let's look into Sunday then. And the game I think that has to generate the most interest around these parts, other than our own here, would have to be the Giants at Buffalo, because the Giants need to win to finally clinch their playoff spot. If they don't beat Buffalo, they must beat the Patriots, earn their way in.
Yeah, and they've got their hands full, obviously, the next couple of weeks. And they've got – the funny thing is they have got the Minnesota Vikings breathing down their backs. And, you know, everybody looked a couple weeks ago when they lost to Minnesota as though they lost at home to a lousy team. The Vikings, that was their second of five straight wins. And the Vikings sitting at 8-6, they're only a game ahead. The Giants can't tie them as far as like a fifth or a sixth seed because they would lose the tiebreaker to them. But I think we're going to get a lot of things solved anyway. I'm sure we'll talk about this game. Washington goes to Minnesota, mm-hmm. and the Redskins are still alive, as are the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
But the Giants last week, I thought defensively was a letdown. I know Eli Manning got a lot of heat last week. I don't know what the official record for drop passes in the game, but the Giants were pretty close last week. They could not hang on to the ball to save their lives. It's very, very, very distressing loss considering now the Giants who, by the way, the Giants who, since losing at Dallas in that Sunday night game, the opening week of the season, have won every other road game. They've won six straight road games.
Right.
Unfortunately for them, they've lost three straight at home. It's a good news this week. They are playing at Buffalo, but this is a very, very savvy Bills team that, you know, maybe a break or two last week in the blizzard in Cleveland could have pulled that one out. I mean, they're not going to the playoffs, but they'll make it very tough on the Giants this week.
Let me ask you then, which number you think is liable to be more accurate? The fact that the Giants are 6-1 away from home, which they will be this Sunday against Buffalo, or the fact that Buffalo has won, what, six of the last seven times they've played the Giants?
Well, a lot of that goes back to, I still think they're revenge from the Super Bowl and so on. But
yeah.
I think it's more the fact that the Giants, I still think that they're a team that, and these second-half collapses have really gone back to even the year before Tom Coughlin took over, to be honest with you. Remember, the Jim Fossils last year, they were 4-4 midseason, lost their last eight games. So it's not just been a Coughlin and Eli thing. It's been a franchise thing. And I think, once again, 6-2 this year, they're only a 500 team the second half of this year. I think that gets in your head. I mean, we find with players in all different sports, the psychological aspect of it, and when you keep on hearing people, oh, you're going to fall again in the second half, I think sometimes it starts to weigh on your mind. It's mm-hmm. something. It's definitely something to keep an eye on.
All right, let's jump ahead, as you mentioned, to that Sunday night game as Washington plays at Minnesota. That certainly has playoffs hanging in the balance for both sides, and Minnesota has been impressive the last couple of weeks, but Washington's been hanging in there too. This may be best game of the weekend.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You look at two breakaway big play running backs in Clinton Portis, who's having another dynamite year, really bounced back well from last year's injury cut short season. And, of course, Adrian Peterson has kind of stifled the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. But when you can put 224 and 296 on the board against a team, you know, there's no doubt about it. He's capable of breaking one at any time. It's interesting. Got a very young quarterback who makes the occasional play. although last week he threw three interceptions, a couple of them were real ugly, against Todd Collins, who last week made his first start in 10 years.
Right.
And didn't put up awe-inspiring numbers. It was very windy for both teams, obviously, at the Meadowlands last week. But they got a win because they were able to run the football. So I'm not going to be surprised if Washington goes in there and wins that game. Minnesota is still a young team, and, you know, maturity is always a question mark. You know, these teams actually played last year in the first Monday night game when Minnesota beat them down in Washington. So it'll be interesting to see what happens here. The Vikings have to take much better care of the ball, and it's funny. This is not a great team, the Redskins-wise, in terms of forcing turnovers and getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback and so on. So it'll be interesting to see what happens here. I kind of lean a little toward Minnesota, but I'm not going to be shocked at all because, you know, listen, everybody, it would be a hell of a nice story if the Redskins somehow managed to get in the playoffs, considering what they've gone through.
Sure.
In the last month or so, you know, already a nice honor by the league and the fans this week and so on, which, you know, Sean Taylor getting voted to the Pro Bowl. It's been, like I said, an absolutely horrendous year in Washington for a lot of other different reasons and so on. And, you know, I will say this about the Redskins. Every year they seem like a team who spends a lot of money, does a lot of personnel changes and so on. They didn't do a lot of that last year, and they seem to be more stable. The last time they didn't really do that was 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Same thing, when they made the playoffs in 2005, started out 5-6, won their last five games to get in, actually won a playoff game by beating Tampa Bay. So we'll see, but a very intriguing Sunday night game, which I'm sure people didn't, just like Buffalo-Cleveland last week, this one's kind of a surprise.
Mm-hmm. The Monday night ESPN game, Denver at San Diego. San Diego continue to win here and keep it rolling toward the playoffs?
Well, they've had Denver's number the last three times. I think they've outscored them 124-50.
Yeah.
In beating them the last three times. LaDainian Tomlinson really cranking it up the last 3 weeks, three straight 100-yard games, running very well. Their defense has been solid. Last week, you know, they pick off Kitna five times, even though they didn't sack Kitna. They sacrificed the sacks and got the takeaways. San Diego's an interesting team because it seems like every time they get up ahead of steam, then something happens. They're in the playoffs. They can obviously still shoot for the third seed. I'll be just curious to see how Phillip Rivers plays down the stretch, John, because he's had his good and very bad moments this year, and sometimes he doesn't inspire with a lot of confidence. He seemed like he took a little bit of a step backwards this year. He seemed like he actually, that step backwards took place late in the second half of last year. So they need him to play very well if they're going to move on and be a, you know, win a playoff game. They didn't want a playoff game in a long time. You know, they've been in the playoffs in recent years. But, of course, you know, they lost in the first round to the Jets a couple of years ago. They lost in the divisional to the Pats. Just right off the top of my head, I don't think they've won a playoff game in a season since 1994 when they beat the Steelers in the AFC Championship game. So,
wow. That is significant. That is significant. I don't
yeah,
know,
and
I don't
they've,
think
I guess
they've
only been in the playoffs three times since then, but they've been
mm-hmm.
out quickly. In 95, when they went back the year afterwards, they got beat at home by the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
So they've actually played three home playoff games since that Super Bowl loss and lost all three of them.
Okay. Well, Russell, I appreciate your spending the time with us as always on Thursdays, and I do hope that you and your family and everyone you work with there at ESPN has a great holiday, and I will look forward to perhaps previewing a little historical event that could occur in another week.
My pleasure, John. Look forward to it.
All right. Thank you, sir. Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, visiting with us here on Thursdays, as he does each and every week, to kind of run down not only the Patriots matchup with the Miami Dolphins in this week in particular, but to take a quick look at some of the key games around the league schedule for the week, this, of course, being Week 16 of the NFL. All right, very quickly here, we've got some locker room interviews that we'd like to play for you before we get off to Patriots head coach Bill Belichick to wrap up the program today. And earlier today, we had a chance to get some thoughts from Patriots linebacker Junior Seau and defensive lineman Richard Seymour on the Patriots' preparations for the Miami Dolphins. Here's Seau and Seymour in the locker room.
Are the Dolphins in your mind a better team than the record reflects?
Oh, definitely. You know, there are a lot of close games that they could have won, and obviously it didn't turn out, you know, the way they wanted it. It's very unfortunate that the record is what it is because we see a better team.
What do you think about the thought of Bill Parcells joining that
organization? We're not worried about Bill. We're thinking about just the Miami offense right now.
What are your thoughts on the starters resting? Probably was going to say, Brady said, he wants to play every snap, but the two games left and everything's sold up. Do you feel like you want to be out there as much as possible?
Well, there's so much to play for, though. You can easily say that, everything is sold up, but, this journey is bigger than we could ever imagine. So, we want to play every down, it's up to Bill. Bill's going to be the guy that kind of makes that call. There's no gray when it comes to that, believe me.
You say you're focused on the Miami offense. Who specifically makes that offense go?
Well, you have Clemens who runs around, and makes plays. They have a little back that is a very fast twitch with, Booker. They have a great defense, Jason Taylor is a guy that, I really respect. I know him as a friend, and, I have a lot of love for him, especially for what he's been doing there of leading that team and obviously playing through this rough time.
Coach Belichick called you a rare athlete today, being able to do what you're able to do, play as much as you're able to play. What's that mean to you?
Well, he's a rare coach to allow me to, an old man to be part of this. So, I think we have a mutual respect with that.
How are you able to persevere?
A lot of prayers. A lot of prayers and hard work and perseverance. And those are the three things that, I base my career on and, I hold on tight. I brace those three. It's been fun. So we'll see how far it goes.
He said, looking at you, no one would think that you were the oldest player on the team. Do you feel like the oldest player on the team, or do you kind of see what he means?
I'm definitely the oldest player on the team. If you can listen to the music around, it's definitely past my time. I'm still with the Shy Lights, and these guys are playing some bass and everything else that kills my ears. So, my time has passed, twice.
You're singing USA for Africa. Do any of them know?
Oh, no, these young kids wouldn't know what that is. But, it's fun to kind of listen to the youth come up and see a lot of these kids grow. So being part of that is definitely special.
When you were in Miami, how much awareness was there for that great team from all the years ago to win your feet? Any reminder about what had happened there?
Well, there's a great history in Miami, and especially with the 72 team. Obviously they've been able to do something that's very special and something we all need to respect and honor. So, whenever you're there going through Huizenga and the Dam Arenas of the world, Don Shula's kind of just over your head and kind of looking over things, and you respect that. That's a great tradition there and a culture that's always going to be there.
Was Shula around in the time you were there? Did you see
him? Oh, yeah. You see a lot of the veterans, and that's what's so special about that. A lot of the veterans make it back, come out and see the guys, and it's definitely a family unit there.
How do you feel about this group of ex-players from 72 that they kind of... they wait for someone to finally lose so they can keep their record intact. It kind of gives them a little jolly feeling there every time.
Well, I respect everything they've done. And, we're not even close to what they've been able to do. We're only on a 15 game, something that we need to do, and we're going to go out there and hopefully perform. But as far as that goes, it's just one game at a time.
Some of those guys are pretty protective of that record. I know the fans are. But...
well, you need to be. That's the prideful thing, especially when you're the only team that's been able to do something special, and that's, you're the only team that has ever done it. And whenever you put a word as ever, that's it. There's no questions about it. So that's special. So, the history of the game stands on its own, but that record does too. So I tip my hat off to him.
Richard Seymour.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of things that kind of hit back up a little bit. I think, over the last last month or so, I don't think we've played our best football. And usually it's, you know, moving into November, December, we're always playing our best football. And I don't think that has really been the case where I think we've been winning, but we also can, you know, be more consistent in what we're doing. So I just think, you know, I think that's what coach is coming from with a lot of issues. And I think it's also showing up on the film where, you know, we see we can do a better job.
With tackling, because that has been an issue, you know.
That's well, all the way, I mean, not just tackling. I mean, a lot of different issues, just assignments, et cetera. Obviously, tackling is one of those major issues where we can get better defensively. So I think it's just a lot of issues that, you know, we can be more aware of situationally, and obviously it can make us a better defense.
Are they a better team than their record reflects in your mind?
Well, their record is what their record is. You know, obviously they have been in a lot of close games and, you know, some games that they could have won. But, you know, and they always play us tough, you know. So I think that's one of the concerns this week is, you know, they always play us tough, and I think we're always going to get everyone's best shot, you know. So we just have to understand that, understand, you know, their mindset and their mentality coming into this football game, and, you know, we'll be ready to go.
Richard, Sunday's game for you, a lot of people thought the old Richard was back. What did you think?
I just thought it was just some opportunities to make some plays. I don't think it's, you know, anything so different from, you know, my games before. You know, just some opportunities presented themselves, and, you know, I was able to take advantage of it. So, you know, obviously just have to see on a week-by-week basis. But, you know, I just try to go out and do what I'm asked to do, what my coaches, you know, ask me to do, and play within the framework of the defense. And, you know, obviously you can always try to go out there and, you know, make plays, but I think we have the type of defense where, you know, we don't really care who gets, you know, the limelight or the fame. You know, we just try to go out and do our job, and hopefully we win as a team.
Do you feel like it's your health has gotten better? It allows you to kind of...
Well, I mean, I think that's with anyone, not just with my health. But, as you know, obviously as you get healthier, you know, especially dealing with, you know, legs, you know, because that's how you run around. So, you know, and trying to play to your strengths, which is, you know, try to be explosive, you know, et cetera. So, you know, as I get healthier, you know, obviously it's the better that I'll be able to play.
Richard Seymour, and just before that, Junior Seau, inside the Patriots locker room from earlier today at Gillette Stadium as the Pats get set for the Dolphins on Sunday. The practice injury report has already been released. Normally comes out about 4 o'clock Eastern time, but it's out for today. Not participating in practice today, Kyle Brady, who's still out with his injured foot, and Billy Yates, also with an injured foot. They were on the injury report yesterday. But also today, Rodney Harrison and Adalis Thomas were added to the injury report, but they did not participate due to team decisions in both players' instances. So not sure what the details may be, but apparently they had at least permission to be away. Limited participation in practice today from Stephen Neal and Benjamin Watson as both players try to recover from injuries for the Patriots. The Dolphins have not yet updated their injury report. Yesterday, not participating, Channing Crowder, who we told you was out for the rest of the year with a knee injury. He had surgery, in fact. Joey Porter was out, Jason Taylor was out, and Keith Traylor. They were all out yesterday for the Dolphins, and my goodness, if they miss all four of those guys defensively for Sunday, that certainly could change things in a hurry, wouldn't you say? One quick email here from Dagmar in Miami, who says, you know, it's hard to tell what the outcome will be this Sunday. If it's wet, I see the Patriots running the ball again. I think there will be a chance for play action pass, short passes to Dante, and maybe some action from Welker. Long passes to Moss will be under question, but if there's any chance, I'm sure they'll go for it. Kevin Falk will be a key player, he says. Don't expect any blowout. Playing it safe will be a smart decision. Patriots may not risk any player with unnecessary scoring drives. If the conditions for the game get better, well, I think it'd be a good chance to see the Patriots unleash the Legion and score over 30 points again. And he says, something else I'd like to say is that if the Pats go 16-0, Belichick deserves to be Coach of the Year. Dagmar in Miami. And with that, Dagmar, we're going to let you listen to the Patriots head coach, Bill Belichick, as the preparations continue for the Miami Dolphins. Kickoff at 4:15 Eastern time on Sunday at Gillette Stadium. This will be our final program before Christmas. Of course, next Tuesday being Christmas Day. We'll hopefully have the day to enjoy for families, and I hope that you do as well. But we will be back next week because it is a big week again with the Giants looming and history. The history books also beckoning the New England Patriots. So we'll be back next Wednesday for the next edition of Patriots Playbook. Wrapping it up today and getting set for the Dolphins, here's Bill Belichick.
Okay, how are things today? Good? Take that as a yes. We're, you know, one of the things we're working on today is Miami's third down packages. And as I think I mentioned yesterday, they've been, you know, using more pressure on third down defensively. And, you know, offensively, they had a real good day against the Ravens, converting third downs. And, you know, both from a protection standpoint, throwing, you know, catching, mixing some sub runs. Quarterback's athletic. You know, he's made a couple plays scrambling and getting out of the pocket. So I think that it'll be a big challenge for us. And doing well on third down, as it always is you know, very, very important to, you know, controlling the game, being able to get off the field defensively and stay out there on offense. So third down, red area, and turnovers, always important. Sure, it'll be important this week, important this time of year. And so that's what we're pushing ahead on that. Again, you know, that's another big challenge. This guy's really fast. He doesn't need much room, and when he gets it, you know, it's usually all over. Not too many people are going to catch him, that I can see. So that's where we're at today.
About third down defense, how does the role of the like the middle linebacker, if that's what you'd call it, on third down change from first and second down to when you go to like a sub defense? Is that really a whole nother?
Yeah, I'd say it goes from instead of from run first and pass second, although you certainly have to be able to defend the passing game on first down. It comes from pass first or pass rush first to run. You know, there just aren't that many runs on third down once you get over 3 yards. I bet the average in the league, it's probably not 10%. But, you know, on early downs, it's pretty much 50-50 or close to it, depending on which team you're playing. So it's much more balanced. And, you know, the people that the offensively that they have in the middle of the field, that a middle linebacker would cover, tight ends, fullbacks, running backs, are a lot less of a threat than on third down when they have, you know, multiple receivers, usually a receiving tight end, sometimes a third down back, you know, like Booker or, you know, the guy like Leon Washington last week, players like that. They're a lot harder for a linebacker to defend than some of the guys who are, again, fullback types or first down running back types or tight ends, some of whom are blockers. A lot of times on third down, those type of players aren't on the field, you know, as the yardage gets longer. So that's where the matchups get tougher. So it's yeah, I think it's a whole different ball game, really.
What makes Junior, when he's out there, effective in that role?
Well, I think Junior has a good combination of skills that, you know, makes it a little hard for the offense to match up with him. You know, he has to match up with them, but they have to match up with him. So he can rush. You know, that's a matchup problem. He can play zone, he can play man, and he has his ability to do those things allow him to, you're not sure what he's going to do all the time. He doesn't always do the same thing. So sometimes he does one thing and somebody else replaces him. Sometimes he does another thing and switches spots with another guy. Assignments, not necessarily spots, but assignments. So, you know, you think you got to be careful with him offensively of who you put on him to pick him up when he's rushing. And at the same time, you can't always count on, well, we're going to be able to get this guy matched up on Junior or anybody else because they may not be there. Maybe somebody else you're matching them up on. So I think his ability to be versatile creates as many problems for the offense as their ability to be versatile creates for him. You know, and sometimes it goes one way and sometimes it goes another.
Facing a different backfield this time than what you had last time, does that pose a challenge at all?
Sure. Well, I mean, Ronnie Brown, as I said, going into that game, I thought that Ronnie Brown was the best offensive player we had seen at that point in time in the year based on his production and his skill level. You know, they replaced him really with three guys. Booker's kind of a really they're kind of their third down back, not exclusively, but he does play more on third down. He's a tough guy to cover. He's good in space. He's run the ball and been competitive in blitz pickup. Chapman and Gatto have both shown good running skills. They've taken short passes in tournament into good gains. I mean, Chapman averaged 10 yards a carry against us, so I mean, I don't think you need to say any more than that. Hope we can be a little more competitive on him and tackle him better than we did. But Gatto's a similar guy, and even Cobbs, who, you know, we know Patrick from when he was here, but he was the guy that, you know, ran the ball well against us and had a very productive training camp for us before Pittsburgh ended up picking him up and he finally, you know, landed down there in Miami. But he's been a good runner too. So I think they have good players at that position, good skill players there that all have a little bit of a different skill set, but they've all been productive.
Bill, what did you see in West that made you think he would fit in with you guys?
Well, as I said, the biggest thing with West was we couldn't handle him. You know, we played against him twice a year. We couldn't handle him. Couldn't tackle him, couldn't cover him, and had to double him a lot. And, you know, he was a tough guy for us to match up with. So we knew from that, you know, he had a good set of skills. He's tough and smart kid, works hard. So he does a lot of things well. He's a hard guy to handle. Okay, how are things today? Good? Take that as a yes. We're, you know, one of the things we're working on today is Miami's third down packages. And as I think I mentioned yesterday, they've been, you know, using more pressure on third down defensively. And, you know, offensively, they had a real good day against the Ravens converting third downs. And, you know, both from a protection standpoint, throwing, you know, catching, mixing some sub runs. Quarterback's athletic. You know, he's made a couple plays scrambling and getting out of the pocket. So I think that it'll be a big challenge for us. And doing well on third down, as it always is you know, very, very important to, you know, controlling the game, being able to get off the field defensively and stay out there on offense. So third down, red area, and turnovers, always important. Sure, it'll be important this week, important this time of year. And so that's what we're pushing ahead on that. Again, you know, that's another big challenge. This guy's really fast. He doesn't need much room, and when he gets it, you know, it's usually all over. Not too many people are going to catch him. That I can see. So that's where we're at today.
Thinking about third down defense, how does the role of the like the middle linebacker, if that's what you'd call it, on third down change from first and second down to when you go to like a sub defense? Is that really a whole nother?
I'd say it goes from instead of from run first and pass second, although you certainly have to be able to defend the passing game on first down. It comes from pass first or pass rush first to run. You know, there just aren't that many runs on third down once you get over 3 yards. I bet the average in the league, it's probably not 10%. But, you know, on early downs, it's pretty much 50-50 or close to it, depending on which team you're playing. So it's much more balanced. And, you know, the people that the offensively that they have in the middle of the field that a middle linebacker would cover, tight ends, fullbacks, running backs, are a lot less of a threat than on third down when they have, you know, multiple receivers, usually a receiving tight end, sometimes a third down back, you know, like Booker or, you know, the guy like Leon Washington last week, players like that, they're a lot harder for a linebacker to defend than some of the guys who are, again, fullback types or first down running back types. Or tight ends, some of whom are blockers. A lot of times on third down, those type of players aren't on the field, you know, as the yardage gets longer. So that's where the matchups get tougher. So I think it's a whole different ball game, really.
What makes Junior, when he's out there, effective in that role?
Well, I think Junior has a good combination of skills that you know, makes it a little hard for the offense to match up with him. You know, he has to match up with them, but they have to match up with him. So he can rush. You know, that's a matchup problem. He can play zone. He can play man. And he has his ability to do those things allow him to, you're not sure what he's going to do all the time. He doesn't always do the same thing. So sometimes he does one thing and somebody else replaces him. Sometimes he does another thing and switches spots with another guy. Assignments, not necessarily spots, but assignments. So, you know, you think you got to be careful with him offensively of who you put on him to pick him up when he's rushing. And at the same time, you can't always count on, well, we're going to be able to get this guy matched up on Junior or anybody else because they may not be there. Maybe somebody else you're matching him up on. So I think his ability to be versatile creates as many problems for the offense as their ability to be versatile creates for him. You know, and sometimes it goes one way and sometimes it goes another.
Facing a different backfield this time than what you had last time, does that pose a challenge at all?
Well, I mean, Ronnie Brown, as I said, going into that game, I thought that Ronnie Brown was the best offensive player we had seen at that point in time in the year based on his production and his skill level. You know, they replaced him really with three guys. Booker's kind of they're kind of their third down back, not exclusively, but he does play more on third down. He's a tough guy to cover. He's good in space. He's run the ball and been competitive in blitz pickup. Chapman and Gatto have both shown good running skills. They've taken short passes in tournament into good gains. I mean, Chapman averaged 10 yards a carry against us, so I don't think you need to say any more than that. Hope we can be a little more competitive on him and tackle him better than we did. But Gatto's a similar guy, and even Cobbs, who, you know, we know Patrick from when he was here, but he was the guy that, you know, ran the ball well against us and had a very productive training camp for us before Pittsburgh ended up picking him up and he finally, you know, landed down there in Miami. But he's been a good runner too. So I think they have good players at that position, good skill players there that all have a little bit of a different skill set, but they've all been productive.
Now, what did you see in West that made you think he would fit in with you guys?
Well, as I said, the biggest thing with West was we couldn't handle him. You know, we played against him twice a year. We couldn't handle him. Couldn't tackle him. Couldn't cover him. And had to double him a lot. And you know, he was a tough guy for us to match up with. So we knew from that. You know, he had a good set of skills. He's tough and smart kid, works hard. So he does a lot of things well. He's a hard guy to handle.
Bill, there have been times when I guess Cameron relinquished the play calling duties this year to Malarkey. When that happens, in this case in particular, do you go with what you know about Malarkey, or do you stick with what Miami has been doing?
Yeah, I don't think it's something that really, you know, we have any control over. We just have to look at what they've done and look at what we've been hurt with and try to, you know, marry the two together a little bit, be ready to defend the problems that we've had, be ready to defend the things that they do well, and in cases where those two mesh, you know, they do something well that we've had trouble with, and I mean, you can pretty much bank on, you know, you're going to get a dose of that. So I don't think it, you know, I think the whole play calling thing's overrated. I've been on both ends of that, and I think it's overrated. You know, when you have a National Football League staff like every team in this league has, an offensive or a defensive game plan and play calling and all that, it certainly comes down to more than one person. There are several people that have input, and how that's done on a team by team basis is probably unique to each team, and it's, you know, it's more the composite and the results of the execution of the play than it is, you know, a lot of plays that are just unstoppable. I just don't think there are that many plays. I'm not saying it isn't important, and I'm not saying there isn't an art to it and a skill to it to keeping the opponent off balance on whichever side of the ball you're on. But I think in the end, it's a lot more important to execute the plays well and efficiently and at a high level than it is to, you know, think that play calling is going to offset a lack of execution. And good execution can offset less than good play calling. I know that for sure. I've been a part of that. Made plenty of calls that really weren't any good, that when the plays were executed at a high level, they still looked okay. So,
talking about Junior, for a player who had quote-unquote graduated 2 years ago to be playing not just at the high level that he is, but also it seems like he's playing a lot.
He is.
Does that surprise you, given, you know, the fact that he had graduated? And also, does it concern you at all that at this stage in his career that he's got that much on his plate?
Yeah, you know, I think, Mike, when you look at the statistics and, you know, maybe some general axioms that are either teams have or that people outside the team just generically observe, you can come to one point. But I think when you look at a specific player, to me, each guy should be looked at individually based on his own situation and the merits or lack of that he possesses. So, you know, I think for people to say, well, this guy's this and therefore he's that, I don't really subscribe to that. I think anybody that's watched Junior play, if you didn't know what his age was, you wouldn't say, you know, he's the oldest player on the team. He doesn't look like it. He doesn't act like it. His energy level is better than most. You know, he's got a lot of experience, and his intelligence goes along with it, and his instincts go along with it. But physically, he, you know, looks a lot less than that. You know, he doesn't look like an old man out there. He's not. So do you say, does it concern you? Well, and he's had really very few injuries in his career. I mean, over the course of his career, and considering the position he plays and the way he plays it and the amount of contact that he's involved in, I mean, it's past remarkable. I mean, it's rare. It's rare. So, you know, on the one hand, is he? Well, maybe he is, but when you look at him and evaluate him, it's hard to find it. You know, it's hard to find examples where he's just not explosive, getting outrun. Doesn't show quickness. I mean, he shows all those things, and he shows them consistently. You know, it's not like it's one play a year or, you know, one play a month. It's, you know, you see him on a weekly basis, and we see him out on the practice field. So,
Bill, as someone who's so respectful of football history, do you remember being mindful of the Dolphins in 72 when you would have been in college? Were you paying attention then?
Yeah, I think everybody that followed football, you know, saw that. And I was a big, big fan of Coach Shula from when he was at Baltimore and from his association with my dad, you know, going all the way back to when they were in Ohio. And, you know, they went all the way back to, you know, when Coach Shula was at John Carroll, my dad was at Reserve, and all the links from back in there. And so then when Coach Shula went to Miami, you know, even though I still was sort of rooting for the Colts, I was kind of rooting for Paul Brown and Don Shula. Those, you know, were the two coaches, and then, you know, the team they had was an awesome team.